First report from ACLU Wisconsin finds that in the last decade, partnerships between local law enforcement and the federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement have grown here in the state, leading to more undocumented immigrants being deported right out of jail or prison. The report finds this has been the case even for undocumented immigrants who have committed non-violent crimes, like driving without a license. Between 2006 and 2020, ICE tried to deport over 12,000 immigrants from jails or prisons around the state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think local law enforcement should cooperate with ICE or Immigration and Customs Enforcement? Do you want to see the Sheriff's Department or municipal police in your area cooperate with federal immigration officials? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Tim Muth is a staff attorney for ACLU Wisconsin and principal author of the report on ICE partnerships with local law enforcement. Tim, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate your interest in this topic.
What did you set out to examine in this report?
What we were looking at is the extent of collaboration between local county sheriffs across the state and ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And what we found is that there continue to be a broad swath of sheriffs who are willing and able to collaborate with ICE in immigration enforcement and deporting people out of our communities across the state.
Paint us a picture of what that cooperation might look like in one of the county sheriff's departments that cooperates with ICE.
Sure. There's different kinds of ways that sheriff's departments collaborate. One is to hold immigrants for up to 48 hours, if they're asked to, by ICE after they should have been released out of the jail, maybe because they paid their bail or they finished their sentence. A second way is entering into agreements called a 287G agreement, because that's the section of the immigration law that it's named after. And that's a kind of a partnership where actually some of the jail personnel are authorized to act as agents of ICE. A third way that we found is that a local sheriff may accept money under a federal grant process in return for identifying undocumented immigrants who they have held in their jail. And then we also just find sheriffs who cooperate informally with ICE. One county in particular we found would regularly just email ICE every time somebody who was born outside of the United States was booked into the jail and ask ICE if they were interested in that person.
And let's talk about the people we're talking about who might be, you know, might come to ICE attention under this. There's a wide range of people born in other countries here in Wisconsin. To what extent are we talking about people who are completely undocumented versus people with various kinds of legal status?
It certainly varies very much from county to county, but at least some of the counties have a practice of everybody who is born outside of the United States, they identify to ICE. So that person might be a naturalized citizen. They might actually be a U.S. citizen, or they might be a dreamer and have DACA status in the country. Or they might be a completely undocumented person who has been living under the radar, so to speak, in the country for a number of years.
And we've got 72 counties in Wisconsin. How common are these various kinds of cooperation, formal and informal?
So very few counties, only about five, have actual formal policies that say they will not hold people for an extra 48 hours if ICE asks for it. As many as 30 counties are receiving money under this federal grant program for identifying undocumented persons who they have held in their jail. We believe that one of the problems is that the vast majority of the counties really have little in the way of formal policy that guides their interactions with immigration enforcement.
We're talking to Tim Muth, staff attorney for ACLU Wisconsin, author, lead author of a new report looking at cooperation between law enforcement, sheriff's offices in particular here in Wisconsin, and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. You can join in if you have a thought or a question or maybe an experience at 800-642-1234. Tim, people might be hearing this and thinking, well, local police departments and sheriff's offices cooperate with federal authorities all the time. If people are here under illegal circumstances, or they've committed some kind of infraction that might violate the terms of their legal status here, what's the problem?
So there are a couple of things. One is just having your local sheriff's department be seen as a partner or a collaborator with ICE makes local communities of immigrants fearful and less likely to interact with local sheriff's departments on all sorts of basis. But the other thing is, I mean, it's important to realize that being in the country without authorization isn't necessarily a crime. Somebody may not have legal authorization to stay here, but that doesn't mean that they have actually committed a criminal offense. Removing somebody from the country is a civil proceeding, not a criminal proceeding in most cases. And in Wisconsin, our law enforcement authorities are supposed to work on criminal matters and keeping our communities safe. Our basic position is leave federal immigration enforcement to federal authorities, and local authorities should focus on the particular things needed to keep our community safe.
Did you find some county sheriff's departments that were more or less doing that, that had a more or less formal policy that says, yeah, we're not going to make these kind of referrals to ICE?
Yes, Milwaukee County, for example, adopted a policy of not holding people for 48 hours when ICE requested, and also reducing the amount of information they shared with ICE. They do not participate in the grant program that shares information about people held in the jail with ICE. And we see a definite correlation between the amount of activity by ICE in Milwaukee County in terms of the size of its population to say, well, I mean, frankly, Door County, that during the time up until Sheriff Barrett took office, was receiving more money than any other county, quite a bit more money than any other county, for sharing information with ICE. So there's a wide variation across the state.
Who is the decider in all these cases? Is it the elected sheriff in a county? Is there oversight from county boards of supervisors or county executives? Who makes the call on these decisions?
It's very much the local sheriff. Local sheriffs are elected directly, and this is an election year for all the sheriffs across the state. And that was one of the reasons we wanted to issue this report, so that citizens can be actively asking sheriffs who are campaigning for office what their policies are, and how they might change those policies if elected.
And what are you asking counties to do, sheriff's offices to do, to review their current policies and consider changes?
We have several suggested things that we would call for sheriffs to do. They need to stop the illegal holding people for 48 hours after an ICE request. Any sheriff who has entered into a 287G agreement should end that agreement. They should enact policies that say that we're not going to share information with ICE unless we're legally required to. If there are legal requirements, certainly the Sheriff's Department should still be sharing, but for volunteering information with ICE should be a policy which is prohibited within a sheriff's department. And then they should end participation in the grant program that gives them money in return for sharing information about undocumented persons held in the jail.
Tim, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Tim Muth is a volunteer staff attorney for ACLU Wisconsin. He talked to us about a report he authored detailing an increase in partnerships between ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and local law enforcement in Wisconsin, particularly sheriff's departments. Next, we'll talk to an immigration lawyer about how these partnerships affect immigrants living in Wisconsin and how they differ from policies in the past. You can still join in at 800-642-1234. Are you or members of your family immigrants? Do you have an experience to share, thoughts on how this all works? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about collaboration between local law enforcement in Wisconsin, sheriff's departments in particular, and Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement, or ICE. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions about that report we just heard about from ACLU Wisconsin. Aaron Barbato joins us now, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School. Aaron, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you for covering this topic.
Yeah, from what we've heard about that ACLU Wisconsin report, is this any surprise to you? Have you seen an increase in this kind of local law enforcement, federal immigration enforcement cooperation over the years?
Yeah, over the years, the cooperation decreased under the Obama administration, but then increased again under the Trump administration. So I was a bit surprised to learn that additional counties in Wisconsin have entered into this agreement while surrounding states have no agreements, 287G agreements at all.
How do these kind of agreements affect people if they come into contact with law enforcement, immigrants who come into contact with law enforcement?
Well, I think if someone comes into contact with law enforcement and they are undocumented, there's a good chance that they could be placed into deportation proceedings and in immigrant detention, which is basically just a jail. The point of 287G and of ICE's role is to ensure that criminal aliens, the words that they use as criminal aliens, are being a high priority. But what we've seen through studies of this 287G programs is the majority of people that are being picked up in this situation are non-criminals or people with very little criminal background.
There's a lot of discretion, as we just heard, from state to state and from county to county, even within Wisconsin. How much variation do you see?
We see a lot of variation. It depends on my clients that I have who may not have the ability to drive, not because they don't want a driver's license, but simply because they're undocumented and they can't yet obtain a driver's license. There are many places in Wisconsin that I fear for them to be driving in a car, even a passenger in the car, because they may be targeted in one of these areas, which is very concerning and not the way that people in the United States should have to live.
Now, if somebody's a passenger in a car, I guess why would their immigration status come up?
Well, hopefully it wouldn't, but there may be a way for the law enforcement to investigate the person that is a passenger in the car and the person who's driving. So no one is necessarily protected in that situation.
Talking to Aaron Barbato, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School, looking at local law enforcement, how they might, in some cases, cooperate with federal immigration enforcement, how that affects people here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Roberto is with us in Hilbert. Roberto, hi.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to share this when I heard the topic today about, I'm thinking about 6-7 years ago, I believe they're always looking for excuses. And sometimes I don't want to talk like generalizing, right? But I got pulled over with the excuse somebody says, or the officer says, that they called, they had a call that somebody was passing. I was driving, obviously. Somebody was passing and passing on double lane or hills and stuff like that. And they were erratically, like, driving really fast or stuff like that, right? So which I'm like, officer, I said, how fast was I going when you pulled me over? He goes, that's not my question. I'm like, officer, I'm just trying to tell you that I followed the rules. But anyways, he gave me a ticket. And it's just sometimes it gets you upset. But we Hispanics live, I want to put that behind, because it poisons your blood when you keep on thinking about that, right? But you can feel it. You can feel it that you're always under a shadow. You're always thinking, is it going to get better? Am I going to be okay today? And it's just so many things that go on that makes you think that you're always under something, under, like, hiding. Because that system makes you feel like a second class citizen, how you're treated. And it is true. You're treated really like you don't belong here. That's how you get certain
Roberto, thanks.
Attitude.
I got you. Thanks for the call, Roberto. Aaron, I think Roberto feeling profiled in his daily life.
Yeah, and I think that is a way that a lot of my clients feel, especially in counties where there are 287G agreements. But, you know, you worry about people, you know, we represent a lot of people who are survivors of serious crimes. And if they're in an area where there's a 287G agreement, they might have a fear of reporting that crime for fear that they will be placed into deportation proceedings. And that's what the law enforcement will focus on, not the perpetrator who committed the crime against them. And people live in fear, and they shouldn't have to.
Thanks for that call. We'll go now to Jacob in Eau Claire. Jacob, hi.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Good. My question is this. I'm just a former, I got about 10 years of law enforcement under my belt in the U.S. military, as well as civilian side in the U.S. And I'm all for immigrants coming from this country that are, you know, here for the right reasons, you know, for integrating into society and doing good for this country and being productive citizens. But my question is this. I just heard lawyers, I think, on the program say, you know, too many people that are getting caught up in this web have either a minor criminal record or no criminal record at all. I mean, I understand if people don't have a criminal record, and, you know, that's fine. I mean, if we're saying that, you know, they entered the country under, you know, whatever circumstance, you know, we could probably handle that and adjudicate that in some other manner. But if somebody, let's say, comes into this country from Switzerland, let's say, and then gets in a car drunk and commits vehicular manslaughter, I'm pretty sure they're going to end up back in their own country, you know, or they're going to be in prison here. So, you know, the thing is I guess my question is, why isn't there a way we can better adjudicate whether if someone has a criminal background or even a medium to major one, go after those people, you know, and make a distinction that the public can readily trust.
Jacob, thanks for the call. Aaron, yeah, is there a way that we can have this kind of cooperation maybe between local law enforcement and ICE when, as Jacob says, a substantial crime is committed?
Well, that already occurs. There are different agreements that there are times that local law enforcement needs to contact ICE based on the law, and especially when there is something serious similar to the situation that he may be presenting. But ICE has a job, and immigration laws are federal. And the studies seem to show that ICE is the best person or the best people to enforce those policies and those laws, while local law enforcement should focus on the laws that they're in charge of on a local or state level.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. James joins us next in Wautoma. James, hi.
Hi, thank you. My point is, I'm all for the people who want to come here and better their lives. And so, but if we want to get people who maybe aren't supposed to be here, go after the companies that hire them, such as restaurants, construction workers, farms and stuff, instead of individuals.
James, thanks for that call. We don't have too much time left, James. Aaron, that's a common suggestion. Go after the people who are hiring, knowingly or otherwise, I guess, people who are here without documentation.
Yeah, I mean, that point comes up a lot. I think one thing that we have to recognize is that a lot of our state is supported by undocumented workers, including our dairy farms, and they would fold without this type of labor. And it's not the way that the system should work, but the people who are here working have no other option. There's no legal path for them generally to obtain a work permit or a visa to remain here in the United States. So it's just a very complicated area.
James, thanks for that call. Aaron, in just our last half a minute or so, are there changes you'd like to see at sheriff's departments in particular that might clarify some of these things?
You know, I think the best option would be to terminate 287G agreements in general and allow local law enforcement to communicate with ICE when they're required by law. The studies have shown that the racial profiling is evident in 287G agreements, and that simply needs to end if we want to have safe communities.
Aaron, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today. Erin Barbato is the director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School. She talked to us about how partnerships between local and federal law enforcement affects immigration policy in Wisconsin and beyond. Earlier, we heard about an ACLU Wisconsin report on that issue.